Good morning, and you are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi, live in studio on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. Devar Sivaj, a single and proud dad to a 14-year-old daughter, who he says is an absolutely incredible human being. Driven by passion and genuine interest in optimizing health and human performance to help people's lives live their lives the best, Devar is committed to helping build better humans through nutrition, strength, and movement. He is a health, fitness, and nutrition expert focused on helping individuals achieve optimum performance. He has 20 plus years of experience working with athletes, high performers, executives, and individuals to realize their potential and live their best life through nutrition, training, and lifestyle modification. Devar also has a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology and Master's from the University of Waterloo, a background in personal and group training, nutrition coaching, is a respected authority in the sports nutrition industry. How cool is that? He is also a certified precision nutrition coach, a qualified and certified practitioner of biomechanical assessment, mastery of program design, and neurotransmitter-based program design through Charles Pullin's Strength Sensei organization. Oh my goodness. That's quite an achievement. Thank you so much, Devar, and welcome to In Conversation with Rashmi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we are doing a Father's Day special here, and we're going to talk about the awesome dads in our community. And when you first became a father, there was a big change in your working life and what it meant. And you have a 14-year-old daughter right now who you are really proud of.
Yes.
So what is that like, being a dad?
Being a dad's an incredible experience. It's for sure the highlight of my life right now. One of the things that's really changed, you mentioned, was my definition of success becoming a dad, right? Mm-hmm. I used to think of success as only being related to, for example, financial success, mm-hmm. but really understanding how to make this area of my life a success has really changed me.
Yeah. That's great. And, being a single parent has its own obstacles. So how do you deal with stuff like that?
Well, I think being a parent in and of itself
is a big
challenge.
Yes,
yeah,
but, it is.
for sure, being a single parent and not being in the household with my daughter poses its own challenges. Mm-hmm. I think I have a pretty unique relationship with both my daughter and her mom. Mm-hmm. And her mom and I have a very special relationship where I think we've both realized that there's something bigger at stake than our needs, which is our daughter's needs. And I think we've done a pretty incredible job of working together to raise this pretty special person. And my daughter's really turned out to be a pretty unique and beautiful young lady. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And do you think as the kids get older, for parents, specifically, single parents, you can kind of ease back more and focus into your work life?
No, not at all. That's always been the challenge. I'm very passionate about my work life and my career and what I do. Mm-hmm. The challenge is finding that right balance to be there and be involved in my daughter's life. And, I've really taken that on as a challenge for myself. One of the things I tell people is I've never understood at first when people say having a child is the best thing that ever happened to me, just to be completely honest and candid. And I think over time, I really realized what that means to me. And what that's meant to me is that having a daughter means I need to become the best person that I can be to show up as that person for her. So, I'm constantly working on myself in order to show up as my best self and be a role model for her in her life. As they get older, it doesn't get easier. It gets better. And my relationship with my daughter continues to evolve. It's been an amazing experience.
That's wonderful. That's great. We'll be right back. You are listening in conversation with Rashmi on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. Imagine having the freedom to move without restriction. Imagine having the confidence to move without hesitation or injury. Imagine having a strong and mobile body with bulletproof joints. And imagine being able to move strong. Devar here will talk about the focus on creating organic strength, mobility, and bulletproofing joints all through a combination of proper movement patterns, body weight training, and strength progressions. Now, what is Move Strong all about?
Good question. I get that question a lot. So Move Strong is my style of training. We're actually running a Move Strong class out of a brand new facility here in Kitchener called Frontline Forward. It's an incredible place to be. And Move Strong is really just that. It's about teaching people to move properly. I think, in my opinion, most of the fitness industry has it wrong, so to speak.
Okay.
One of the issues that I see in the fitness industry, especially now, is that we've kind of blurred the lines between what it means to look good and what it means to actually feel good and be healthy. And the two are not one and the same. And don't get me wrong, I do think it's important to look good. I think that's an important part of our human physicality. But I do truly believe that looking good should be a reflection of how
good you feel.
Good you feel and how well you move. And that's really what we focus on the Move Strong classes. If all that you do is go to the gym and work out on machines, well, machines are very linear.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, once you leave the gym, the world is not linear.
It's not.
Right? So you need a different type of strength for the real world.
Yeah. And you've kind of made a comment on, we have created environments around us for ourselves that may cost us our mobility. And
correct.
One of the main reasons in the areas of focusing on Move Strong method is to create mobile bodies. So do these classes, is it all about movement?
That's exactly what it's about.
Okay.
It's about, we're going to challenge your body to move in ways that you're not used to moving in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to create organic strength, and we're going to take your joints out of their regular range of motion in a very controlled fashion so that we strengthen the joints. And that's one area that I think the fitness industry has really missed. We focus on strengthening our muscles, but you're always going to create limits if you don't strengthen the joints, because that's generally where injury occurs, is around the joint area.
So people who have issues like, arthritis and stuff, it's all from the joints. And how does that play into this?
Right. Well, the body gets better at doing whatever you do more of. And you mentioned that we created these very artificial and comfortable environments. And if you think about how our ancestors lived, well, they didn't have these wonderful chairs to sit in all day and all this perfect straight concrete to walk on all day. So they were always challenging their joints. They would squat, climb, run, jump, roll, all of these things that we no longer do. Like I said, the body gets better at doing whatever you do more of. So the more that you sit still, the better the body gets at being still. Then when you go to call upon movement, it's either not available to you or you cause injury. So okay. What we're going to do is challenge your body into those movement patterns in a controlled environment so that when you do go there on your own, that you feel strong and confident and you can move really well.
Awesome. And you also said, you know, that we not stop playing because we get old.
Yes.
I love that. But rather, we get old because we stop playing. So how does that fit into, again, you know, you have these yes. classes that you have at Frontline Forward, and people kind of tend to step back as they get older because, okay, we can only limit ourselves to walking or right. doing, you know, small, odd.
It's so sad. It's so unfortunate. One of the things that we do in the class is we utilize play, and play is something that is innate within us and human. And I think, one of the reasons we do that is because, one, it's interesting. Training, just using machines can get quite boring. But we use play and intentional and purposeful play in order to, number one, for conditioning. It gets the blood flowing, oxygen feeds the body. But the other thing is it challenges your joints, it challenges your mobility, it challenges your coordination, and it challenges your strength. And it's fun to do. Mm-hmm. We look around the classes we play and everyone's smiling, but everyone's sweating and breathing a little heavy because, again, it's intentional play with the intention of becoming better at play and better at movement. So it's a fun little portion of the class, but we do focus on other stuff as well. We focus on, our daily mobility practice, which I call flossing the joints. So taking every joint in the body through its full range of motion daily. If you don't do that, you will lose that mobility. Then we focus on body weight strength at whatever level or progression you're at. And we welcome everyone at every level with the goal in mind of being a little bit better when you leave the class than when you came into the class. We create a very welcoming and open environment. I call it my movement tribe of people because everyone's such amazing people in that class. And every time we have a new member, they're so welcoming of them. Mm-hmm. And I do realize how intimidating it can be to walk into a large commercial gym where you don't know anyone. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to create the opposite of that here, a very welcoming community for everyone involved and everyone encouraging everyone to get better no matter your level.
So anybody can register for classes here?
Absolutely.
It's open to public?
Open to the public. You do not have to be a member of Frontline Forward.
Okay.
First class is always free, so you have nothing to lose. I tell people, at least just come in for one class, and I promise you, you're going to learn at least one thing that you can take away and apply on your own in your everyday life to become a better mover. It's very exciting for
me. That's great. Yeah. So what is a pro coach? How does that work?
So the other passion of mine is nutrition coaching.
Okay.
So I am a precision nutrition coach.
Mm-hmm.
I like to encourage people to move well, but I do truly believe that you need to eat well and you are what you eat. So I do work with individuals both on movement and nutrition to become the absolute best human being that they can be.
And who's pro coach for?
Pro coach is for absolutely anyone. It's a program that I use, and really it's a habits-based approach to nutrition. I don't believe in meal planning. I don't believe in counting calories. I believe in intuitive eating, and if I can just share with you some of the principles and educate you on how to think about food, mm-hmm. what I've found almost every single time with individuals is they just end up making the right choices on their own and doing things like meal plans and diets and eating chicken breast and brown rice and broccoli is just a terrible way to live, right? I enjoy, exploring food and what food means to you and our connection with food, our relationship with food to create, like I said, better human beings, right?
That's great. And your classes at Frontline Forward, what time are they? What days do you run them?
Yeah, so every Monday and Wednesday evening, we run from 6 to 7:30.
Okay.
And every second Saturday from 10:30 a.m. till 12. And actually today, we have a free class going on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we're going to focus on the shoulder joint today. So it's Shoulder Love Saturday.
And today's I should come for that class.
Yeah, most people do suffer from some type of problem with the shoulder. So that we're working on today is corrective exercises to give you strong, resilient, bulletproof shoulder joints.
Ah, awesome. I need to sign up for that class. All right. Thank you so much, Deva, for being here and wishing you a very happy Father's Day. And hope you spend a wonderful time with your lovely daughter. And thank you for helping me and our listeners understand the importance of moving our bodies through movement. You are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi, live in studio on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, bringing you your community stories. So stay tuned for my next guest, Dave Tidd. He's a husband and a doting dad to his two beautiful kids. Dave will share his journey since being diagnosed with brain tumor and how it changed his life forever. So don't go away, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
See it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying you'll never reach it. Every step I'm taking, every move I make feels lost with no direction. My faith is shaken, but I gotta keep trying. Gotta keep my head held high. There's always gonna be another mountain. I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle. Sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. It ain't about how fast I get there. Ain't about what's waiting on the other side. The struggles I'm facing, the chances I'm taking, sometimes might knock me down, but no, I'm not breaking. I may not know it, but these are the moments that I'm gonna remember most. Yeah, just gotta keep going.
Sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. Ain't about how fast I get there. Ain't about
Hello, and those of you who have just tuned in, you are listening to In Conversation with Rashmi at CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. You can also listen to us live online on radiowaterloo.ca. And if you have a story to share or want to advertise, you can email me on air with Rashmi at gmail.com. Now, the guest I have next, he's a husband, a dad to two beautiful children, and a brain tumor survivor. Please join me in welcoming David Tidd. Thank you so much for joining in, David. And my listeners are, you know, excited to listen to your story and your incredible journey as well. So take us back to how it all began.
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost 5 years now since I was initially diagnosed and we discovered this thing. Yeah, it really came out of the blue. It was very unexpected. I had some symptoms, you know, things like just being dizzy kind of thing when I, you know, and I chalked it up to like not eating proper breakfast or, you know, standing up too quickly and things like that. But it wasn't until things got truly bad that I finally went to the doctor. So my wife was encouraging me to go to the doctor for a while. And of course I said, yeah, you know, no kind of thing or whatever. But I was just at work and I was on the computer sitting at the desk kind of thing. And my knees got really, really weak. I got, you know, dizzy. I went to the washroom and sort of my legs buckled going to the washroom in the office, that kind of thing. So right then and there from work, I called the doctor. And after that, everything was fine kind of thing. So I sort of went on with work, went on with normal life, and went to the doctor, passed a bunch of tests that he made me do, you know, and went there, but, you know, a bunch of different places, ECGs and EKGs or whatever.
Yeah.
Then finally, one afternoon, he's one of the tests that he ordered was a CT just to be safe kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I went to that. In between, you know, work appointments, it was just on an afternoon kind of thing. So I thought I was be in and out quick. But following that CT, immediately, you know, I was, got the news kind of thing that I had a large mass in my brain and all that kind of stuff. And,
so it, how
it
long
didn't really hit me?
So. Yeah. Like how long from the time your symptoms were to when it was diagnosed? Like, did you have a couple of months?
Looking back on it, I probably had symptoms for a long, long time. Right? But yeah, like a couple months of like bad symptoms kind of thing or whatever. But yeah, I bet you it went on for sort of a decade kind of thing. So, you know, things like hearing loss, you just chalk it up to different things. Or so the one ear I couldn't hear properly out of, and I just thought, you know, as a kid, I listened to loud music. I had a loud stereo in my truck kind of thing at the time. So I thought like maybe I did some damage to it that way, or maybe it was wax in my ear or something like that. It was just, you always explained it somehow kind of thing, but it wasn't, you know, obviously due to that. It was due to this brain tumor.
Okay. And the CT came out saying this is what it was. And how quickly were you seeing a doctor or a neurosurgeon?
They took me right away. So just here, I had the CT at Grand River Hospital, but and that was in the afternoon. And then that night, I was had to go to Hamilton Hospital. And the plan was that they were going to do surgery on it right away because it was very large and really, really bad. And so they're going to do surgery on it right away. But
so when you found out and this was it, and you know, you needed to go through surgery, like that would take a big toll on, you know, you and your family.
It does.
So how did your wife deal with it? Because I think she was pregnant at that time too.
She was pregnant at the time. She was about 5 months pregnant with our second at that time.
Okay.
And we had a 2-year-old daughter as well, kind of thing, right? So like life was certainly busy. How you deal with it, how she deals with it or whatever, because she was basically a single mom for a long, long time. It was hard. You know, a lot of friends, obviously family, things like that helped out where we could. you know, things like even when I was on the hospital or whatever, like we'd have someone to watch her daughter and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of us were working obviously anymore and things like that. So like it was different. It was challenging.
So then yeah. When was surgery scheduled?
Initially it was 3 days, but due to complications or whatever, they said that they weren't going to do that. So then it was about 2 weeks after I was initially diagnosed that they were going to do surgery. So in the meantime, we had like tons of doctor's appointments and things like that, that we had to go to more tests and all that kind of stuff. We did have some free time. So we, you know, managed to go to the zoo, you know, have
do
picnics, like just live life as much as you can kind of thing in those 2 weeks and try not to think about it.
Yeah. Because it's hard to try to, you know, stay positive during these tough times. And
yeah.
How did you guys manage that? It's not easy.
You kind of have to force yourself to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were side effects kind of thing that we were expecting as a result of this whole brain tumor kind of thing. And, you know, it can always be worse than what it is. So we just sort of nothing we can do about it.
Let's, yeah.
You know, move on and that kind of thing.
And they told you, well, 3 days you're going to be out of the hospital and you're going to get back to work and
yeah.
Life's going to be better.
Yeah. We asked, you know, obviously, like with the surgeon, like, you know, and he said, everyone's different, but, you know, you'll probably be, you know, 3 days in the hospital. You'll be off work for, you know, 3 days or 3 weeks rather,
mm-hmm.
Or so. And, you know, life will be back to normal. And that's certainly not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so surgery is 2 weeks. We were all ready for it. It was like first thing in the morning. And then the anesthesiologist called in sick at the last minute.
Oh, no.
So the surgery was postponed again. So like literally I was on the operating room table and the anesthesiologist didn't show up.
Really?
Yeah, it was very, very last minute.
Wow.
And then finally, like a week later or whatever, it was rescheduled kind of thing, that kind of thing. So, but yeah.
And there were complications that even the surgeons themselves didn't expect going in that, you know, you would have this blood loss, and what happened there?
They had a huge amount of blood loss. Their operation in total lasted 13 hours.
Wow.
And pretty much right away they encountered like a severe amount of bleeding. So typically when you have brain surgery, you don't bleed at all kind of thing, or very little kind of thing, like a thimble size full.
Okay.
And I had a total of 60 blood products basically transfused to it. And so it was including like 12 liters of blood. So it's equivalent to like three times the amount of blood in my body kind of thing they had to replace. The tumor was very vascular.
Okay.
And so, you know, as soon as they cut into it, it bled and it didn't stop bleeding kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
In total, they removed about half the tumor. It was 5 centimeters. They removed, I think, 2.2 centimeters of it. Because I was bleeding so much, they just had to stop the bleeding and like try to save my life, basically.
Yeah.
Rather than removing the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was definitely unexpected. I, of course, knew nothing of what was going on. You know, the nurse came in, you know, to check on, you know, my family kind of thing during the surgery. And they said, you know, surgery's doing fine kind of thing. He's getting a little bit of blood products and things like that. And my wife
had no idea.
Well, she's a nurse.
Oh.
So she kind of said like, what's going on or whatever. Like she kind of had an understanding and
mm-hmm.
that obviously I wasn't supposed to get blood.
Yeah.
She was kind of skeptical at that point, but really the family was somewhat kept in the dark during the whole 13 hours. And it wasn't until after the surgery was over, the surgeon came in and apparently he was gray and, you know, tired and, you know, that kind of thing from the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
He basically gave the news that I had 4 days to wait and see what happened.
Wow, you were in ICU for 4 days.
I was in ICU for 10 days.
10 days, wow.
But I was, he gave my wife basically the news that, you know, I had 4 days to live or die, see what happens.
Oh my, wow.
Kind of thing, right? So, She thought she was going to be a single mom. She was pregnant, kind of thing, with the second or whatever. And so it was certainly challenging for her at the time.
Yes, for sure.
Like I said, I knew nothing.
Yeah.
I was totally out of it.
And you were unconscious too, right?
Yeah.
And how did, like, things started to get better? And you did have infections and stuff that you were fighting as well.
Yeah. There was a number of infections that I had, you know, these hospital-acquired bugs and things like that that I got. You know, side effects from the surgery, fluid still wasn't draining properly from my brain. They wanted to do another surgery to put basically a shunt in my brain so that would drain the fluid. But I kept getting bypassed for that too, you know, and simply by luck kind of thing. Yeah. Hamilton General Hospital is a trauma hospital.
So yes.
You always hear about people getting airlifted or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, because I just needed a shunt, I was lower on the priority.
Okay.
And so they kept taking these sort of emergency patients and operating on them kind of thing. And I got sort of pushed to the bottom.
Oh, my.
So each day they would say, you know, you're going to go for a surgery, blah, blah, blah. And you'd wait all day for the surgery. And, oh, we're not doing it today. We're going to do it tomorrow. It just never happened.
Do you never needed that shunting?
Yeah, eventually fluid drained and they're like, oh, you don't need surgery anymore. So,
oh, that was a blessing.
So that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Cause I definitely didn't want another surgery.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And, after which 10 days passed and then you were into rehab then?
Well, not quite. I was 10 days in ICU.
Okay.
So I was on like a breathing tube and all that kind of stuff in the ICU. And then I moved to, I guess, the neuro floor or something like that. And so in total, I was in hospital for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
And then I did a bunch of radiation and, you know, rehab and things like that. Stuff like speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, all that kind of stuff for 7 months before I was sort of cleared enough to go back to work and all that kind of stuff.
And during this whole time after you've recovered, and you know, the tumor is still there, part of it?
Tumor's still there. Yep.
Okay. And they keep monitoring and seeing?
They monitor it. It used to be sort of like every 6 months kind of thing, and then now it's every year.
Okay.
So every September I go for a follow-up MRI just to make sure that the tumor that's in there, you know, is not changing in any way.
Okay.
Yep.
So this whole journey, there's a lot to be grateful for as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, having being there to watch your newborn while your wife is pregnant and being a dad to the two beautiful kids you have now, they're definitely grown, you know, to be beautiful kids in the last 5 years since this whole journey. How has that played into how you see life today?
Yeah, I mean, you hear it all the time. People tell you, you know, live life to the fullest and you know, take each day as it is or whatever. You know, there's a bunch of different sayings. But it's true. It's true. And you need to remind yourself of that because even me, like sometimes you get caught up in things or whatever. And, you know, maybe building Lego with the kids, you know, is more important than whatever else, you know, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to take, things as a blessing kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my son being 5 years old, it's, you know, every time I look at him, I'm like, I might have never met you kind of thing or whatever. So he's a good reminder and a sort of a good way to keep track of how long it's been.
Yeah.
Because he was basically born at the same time when all this was happening or whatever, right? So he's five or almost five. And so I can totally relate to like, okay, I almost missed out on these 5 years kind of thing with you.
Yeah.
So he's fine. And then my daughter's almost seven too. So she's at a different stage as well. So,
And watching them grow up now, your role as a dad, I'm sure going through what you've gone through, you 5 years later, you still have certain challenges you face today even, right?
Yeah.
So like, what are the issues even after rehab
and
stuff?
Side effects, there's nothing really visual, you know, but just by looking at me or whatever, you wouldn't necessarily know that, you know, I had some things that I was dealing with. You know, one of the main sort of things was I'm completely deaf in my right ear. Mm-hmm. I don't hear anything, which is fine. It doesn't really bother me. I've come to live with it. I've gotten used to it.
Yeah.
It's annoying in certain situations. People try to whisper in your ear and you have no idea what they said, or, you know, you're in certain environments where you can't hear properly. But the big thing that bothers me the most is just my coordination. So the where the tumor was located in my brain affected sort of my balance, the coordination, so of the right side of my body. So things like handwriting, you know, I'm right-handed. I have a real struggle with that. Anything to do with your right hand, like throwing a ball, throwing a frisbee, you know, eating is challenging, kind of thing, right? So you learn to do things maybe with your left hand. They encourage me to use my right, but I don't, obviously, right? It's too hard, so use your left. Simple things like hammering a nail or whatever. Like, you just can't.
These are things we take for granted, right? Like, I'm sure you brush your teeth with it, and it's a challenge in itself.
It's literally everything, you know, and so I'm reminded all the time, you know, unfortunately. Or fortunately, that, you know, this is sort of the way things are, and the tumor's still there, and, you know, that kind of thing.
So how do you deal with that frustration? Like, because at times, I know it can get really frustrating, pull you down, you get into a different space.
Yeah.
And how do you bring yourself to say, okay, this is the new me, and I'm just going to have to live with it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really all you can do is just... You know, this is the things, sure, you know, there's certain things that I couldn't do. So my son, you know, he's riding a two-wheeler, basically, since he was three. So he's really, really good at riding his bike.
Nice.
but I couldn't hold on and run behind him, kind of thing, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And he's playing t-ball today, kind of thing, or whatever. So, like, I can't necessarily throw a ball to him. So it's tricky, those things, but you just... You live with it. You gotta look at the positives, and you're still here. It could be worse.
Yes. Kind of thing, right? Considering, you know, way back, things could have gone completely another way.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I had 4 days basically, right? So it could have been way worse. At least I'm here to watch him ride his bike. I can't help him necessarily learn to ride his bike, but I'm here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right?
That's great. And how is your wife? I know, as a spouse, you know, it's harder on them because, again, they go through the emotions that... So she's been a great support to you. However, there are a lot that, you know, the spouse doesn't understand as well during times like these. And after so many years, people expect you also, you know, hey, come on, move on with life, get on with stuff. And that can be frustrating.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with... when people outside your own circle or just within your own friend circle and family kind of say, okay.
I don't know if it never had that necessarily happen.
Okay,
you know,
that's great.
Most people are pretty understanding.
That's wonderful.
Like I said, I'm not like total, I can still do stuff. You know, like, things are still very, very good. Certainly, going back to, like, I knew no better when I was in the hospital, and I remember being, I couldn't talk, but I was sort of, like, signaling to my wife, like, to tell me, like, what's going on, like, what happened with surgery or whatever, and she wouldn't tell me what happened or whatever, and all she would tell me is, I'll tell you later, you know, surgery went really bad or stuff like that. So things are certainly harder on her, because she's living through it, kind of thing.
Yes.
Like I said, I knew nothing.
Yeah. So 5 years later, you started in 2016, your very first walk as a family, in the hope of, you know, raising awareness as well. And you made it an ongoing tradition to do the brain tumor walk in KW. So what's that all about?
Yeah. So we never knew about it before, but in 2016, we discovered this whole brain tumor walk in KW. So it's from the Canadian Brain Tumor Association.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we try to do it every year now. And we obviously raise funds and things like that. And it's a good reminder to, you know, celebrate, you know, life, that kind of thing. And, you know, raise funds. So hopefully they can help the Brain Tumor Association with, you know, future patients, kind mm-hmm. of thing like that. So I know they were a big help to us. We had very little information at the time regarding this tumor.
Okay.
As a result of brain tumor, they had some information pamphlets. The hospital basically had nothing what was going on or whatever.
Yeah.
But the Brain Tumor Association, I still have the book. Talks about all the, you know, the 120 different types of tumors that there is and things like that.
Oh, wow.
And so the different types of, they do a bunch of different things or whatever, but mm-hmm. that's just one of the ways that they support patients trying to get that information, because without them, you know, it wouldn't be there. You know, of course, there's a research aspect to it as well and all that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
And connecting with people who have probably gone through similar situations and, you know, having that network of people who yep. can understand what you're going through as well gives you that support system too, right?
Yeah. So the type of tumor that I had was a very rare type of tumor. It's called acoustic neuroma. So okay. it grows on the hearing nerve basically inside my brain. It, like I said, it's very rare, but as a result of the brain tumor walk and things like that, I've actually met some people, you know, that have the same type of tumor kind of thing,
okay.
right? So one that, you know, I was very good friends with before. So she was a fellow realtor at the same company as me, you know,
okay.
at the time. She had the exact same type of tumor. So she doesn't work at the same company as me anymore or whatever, but mm-hmm. it's just funny that, okay, she's also a realtor. She also worked at Cold Banker kind of thing or whatever. So like, it's just,
and you can share notes on,
yeah.
you know,
so we
what
follow
it
each
is
other
like
kind of thing of what's going on kind of thing. And, just the other day, somebody reached out to me as well, kind of thing that, you know, dealt with this same thing very recently mm-hmm. as well.
So do you believe that, you know, talking to people and sharing your story or sharing how you feel has kind of, it takes off that pressure off
you? It does. It does. Being open about it, talking about it, helps kind of thing. Having a positive attitude definitely helps. It sounds silly, but it you know, all those things is almost like a therapy kind of thing, right? Like it helps ease my mind and it helps maybe not worry about things so much or whatever, right? So
mm-hmm.
You sort of don't worry about it, you know, for the whole year. And then when it comes time for that yearly MRI, maybe you worry for, you know, a few weeks or whatever. And then after, you have to wait for the results and meet with the surgeon and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's probably a month of like severe worrying, but, you know, that kind of thing. You just try to take it as it is.
As it is. And the brain tumor day is on June 8th. They have a walk
That's
in
right.
Waterloo.
Yep, next Saturday.
Okay, and they have it at the Waterloo Park. It's going to be at the entrance of Father David Bauer Drive in Waterloo. They have two routes that, you know, people can walk. It's either a 2.5K or a 5K, and the registration opens at 8:30 a.m. The walk begins at 10 a.m.
That's right.
And your family's a part of this walk as well.
Yeah, so myself, my wife, the kids, they all do it. We're going to have some friends joining us this year as well, so it should be good. For those who know, I recently broke my leg and I'm walking with a cane, so the 5 kilometers could be interesting.
How did that happen?
long story, but it happened. I slipped on the ice.
Oh, no.
Just on the driveway. And it all happened 2 days before we were supposed to leave to go to Jamaica. So as a family, so we had to cancel that trip as well, which was
oh,
very
no.
disappointing.
Well, I hope you get to that trip sometime soon and you
winter,
recover well. Yes. But thank you so much, Dave, for coming in and sharing with our listeners your real and raw experiences and
yep.
putting life into perspective for all of us. And help us understand to be thankful for the small joys that life brings us and live each moment to our fullest. Wishing you and your family the very best. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And next week, Saturday, June the 8th at 9 a.m., I will be chatting with Lloyd Smith and Carolina Miranda in conversation with Rashmi. Lloyd Smith is a race director for Run Waterloo, and he's an avid runner for over 40 years. Lloyd began directing racing in 1987. He has a reputation for organizing quality events, a long history of race innovation, and a dedication to the community. He will share how it all began, the inspiring community through running. A family effort since conception, the organization is dedicated to building a strong, healthy, and connected community in Waterloo region through the sport of running and attitude of giving back. And my second guest, Carolina Miranda, she's an educator certified by the Ontario College of Teachers, and she holds a Master's of Education from Nipissing University. She was one of the main organizers of the first Waterloo Region Women's March in 2018. She is also the creator and co-founder of Feminine Harbor, a social profit that promotes education, storytelling, and the arts by women in order to foster female leadership. A single mother of two incredible girls who inspire her daily to become not only a better person, but to leave behind a better world. Equity, diversity, and inclusion are not just aspects of her job, but how she authentically lives her relationships with direct family ties to four different countries, Canada, Brazil, Spain, and the Dominican Republic. To hear their incredible journeys and work in the community, tune in on CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo or listen live online on radiowaterloo.ca Saturday, June 8th at 9 a.m. If you have a story or want to share it, you can also email me online with rashmi@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Facebook in Conversation with Rashmi or our Instagram feeds at CKMS 102.7 and at Rash Sanj. Until then, have a wonderful weekend and thank you for listening in Conversation with Rashmi.